Francis Hunt, the market sniper himself. Welcome to the Confident Investor, my friend. How are you?
Delighted to be with you in all your iterations, Tom.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to have you on the new show, and looking forward to diving in today. And I think kind of an interesting place to start is basically this larger treasuries problem, or the powers that be might not be calling it a problem, but it's kind of interesting to see all of these ideas being thrown around on Twitter lately, especially, let's say, public speeches, public ideas being thrown out about all of the stablecoin legislation, what that means for demand, the fact that treasury auctions are sound. So why don't we start there? We'll move through all the parts of this, but do you see robust treasury demand at this time, the way it's being spoken about?
So that's a great question. The question, I suppose, is who's the bias of what is actually an asset that we've said is well overvalued and is the actual bubble? So all those that are in the gold's a bubble and it's correcting camp, I'm here to say gold is the thermometer, not the temperature itself in the sauna. It's just telling you it's getting hot in here. The real fire that's creating the heat and the real bubble is debt and fiat. And they should be merged into the same category because essentially people get a bit confused. They think a currency in crash, but but the debt isn't associated in some way. And I loved this, and I give credit to Chris McIntosh, who's someone you should also get on, by saying that, remember, debt is just currency. It's just delayed currency. It's just future currency with a rental attached to it. So everything is fiat and debt. It's one. I talk about the Siamese twins conjoined at the head. You can't drown one without the other, I say. Bit of a dark metaphor, but hardly politically correct. But the point I'm trying to make is you can't separate their outcomes because money is borrowed into existence. A debt instrument is a fiat instrument. A fiat instrument is a debt instrument, and all of that. So you're highlighting, sort of going back to your question after a bit of clarification, the question is, where's the demand coming from? Do we have, and we get these auctions and you'll get a lot of influencers that will come out and say, another robust, well-demanded auction on the treasury market. That's all that means is that certain institutions or entities are showing up and making purchases of T-bills and treasuries and bonds of various durations. And when we look at that, we realize we've unearthed the Cayman Island basis trade story. It's not only the Cayman Islands, it's hedge funds. And what we've found, and other people leaning on other people's work as well, it's not all my research. I'm just bringing the spotlight more onto other people's research in some senses, is that there's an incredible leverage Ponzianomics, I can only call it, that is actually seeing hedge funds now be re-rated or redisclosed as being four times bigger. Cayman Islands based hedge funds are four times larger than they were originally thought to be as holders of treasuries. And so what's actually happened is since the April peak Trump tariff tantrum that saw the dollar crash, rate spike, and the bonds crash, which was a big wobble in April, the Bank of International Settlements have studied this and started to make some statements. And these statements are clearly directed at the Fed and more broadly, possibly the Treasury and all US financial plumbing players. And what they've said is you've got a crowded trade there in that basis trade, and it's ridiculous amounts of leverage. It's so ridiculous, Tom, that I have to introduce you to the phrase of a negative haircut. I imagine you and I would both be candidates for negative haircuts, and we'd suddenly end up with big quiffs on our head.
Usually I get a negative haircut and I get a lot of blood in the shower. So yeah, I'm
That's
well,
right. It's
we're both well aware of those.
three layers of skin on your razor. Yeah, that's a negative haircut. Well, the financial negative haircut is increased lending against collateral beyond the value of the collateral. So you have $1, You borrow 99, you buy $100 worth of treasuries, and you pledge that $100 as collateral. And the negative haircut is it's considered pristine collateral in short supply. Listen to the lies whenever they use this colorful language. And we'll let you, Tom, borrow 110 against your $100 asset. So you go from having $1, you've leveraged yourself up ridiculously up between 100. 50x, 100x to be able to buy 100 of treasuries. Let's say it's just dollars, but obviously this would be hundreds of thousands, hundred billions potentially. And then you get treated like it's such great collateral. Here, have some more when on top of that. So not only, and that's not underwriting for risk. This is what I call a not-for-profit trade and not-for-profit lending. And it's the primary dealers, the repo markets, and the money markets that are the between the bank funding systems that are facilitating hedge funds as leverage players. And it seems very specific to they are doing the treasury basis trade. Don't you and I try form a hedge fund and say, hey, we'd like to go 120x long gold and put in $1 and borrow 99. They're not going to lend us that money. And even if we did and brought it and said, this is pristine collateral, they're not going to give us 120% of its value and say, yeah, here's another 20% on top of that. Go repeat the trade. So it seems a very specific grouping of people in the primary dealers circle, the repo markets and money markets that have access to this internal plumbing that is within the walls of the main banking system. It's not retail banking by most people's standards, that are facilitating excessive leverage by intent on a non-commercial basis. There's no justification that there's no risk-free trade. We've quite clearly, when the bonds corrected 55%, go look at the TLT ETF of long-term debt. It's fallen 55% from its high to its low in a matter of 3 years. It's clearly a much more risky asset class now. It's our contention that debt markets, the 40-year bull market is over, and that turned in 2020. And we've had further names get added to our opinion last year in 2024 when Druckenmiller and Tudor Jones said the same. So Americans and American fund managers and office managers are shorting debt. But you've got a hedge fund which is buying 1.8 trillion. And I mentioned in the Cayman Island, they have a GDP of about 7.1 2023 numbers. Call it 7.5 today, assuming. And they have, it's the equivalent of you having a quarter of a million a year income, Tom, and having a 68 million bond portfolio. So I would put it to you that the probabilities that on that income, a bit of expenses, a wife and kids, or a car to pay, a couple of motorcycles, knowing you're not actually got the net after tax for accumulating a 68 million bond portfolio.
Sounds like politician numbers.
Well, it sounds like Enron, Nvidia, and Larry Ellison of Oracle type numbers as well. If you want some more other potential landmines that I think we can hit. So the financial system is exceedingly precarious, and it's a manufactured proxy, US proxy. A lot of them are in the Cayman Island. It's a known CIA stronghold. They do a lot of operatives there. There's a lot of retired Goldman Sachs executives there, and people that golf and have lunch in the Caymans and have a pretty relaxed time. But it's pretty much an American business. They're calling New York. They're there for the tax. They're there for other reasons. But it's pretty much an American servicing landmass, if you can call it that, because it's a speck in the ocean. I mean, Jamaica is huge compared to it. Cuba's huge. But that's not the point. This is the geography. So for me, it's a proxy control that is being facilitated on an unsound basis to get hyper-leveraged. And it is a one-trick pony trade, which is shorting futures, which, because they delivered at some time in the future, has a higher price than the underlying, and then the holding of the underlying and the futures till you get to expiry when typically the two prices meet. And there's a lot of cost to doing that because they are actually only putting up $1 or $2 for every $100, and they're borrowing in the repo markets overnight on a 24-hour basis at a cost. That is the yield that the money market guys are getting. That's the likes of Warren Buffett, who's helping fund this by having over 300 billion himself. I think it's 340, I don't know the exact number, in cash, earning around 4 or just over 4% tax, because he doesn't want to participate in the late stage of the Ponzi in the equity markets valuation, where you're on the Buffett indicator through 220%. So, there's Ponzi's everywhere we look. And your question is it legit manufactured demand? And the short answer to your question is 100% no for me. A, they don't have the money. They're being lent it on a very peculiar basis, and they're getting collateralization against something they barely own to buy more. So they're excessively geared, it's excessively leveraged, and it's entirely reliant. It's not a risk-free trade like most things. It's not like it's an arbitrage, which technically can be risk-free. It's entirely reliant on normal contango futures behavior to the underlying, which is that it starts off more expensive, and as you get nearer term, the price comes down. Like whether you're delivering gold or silver, the further out contracts are higher because of interest, carry cost you're not having to pay, storage costs, various other frictional costs. The further out you go, the more expensive the item is. However, quite regularly, as you'll know, in futures markets, you get the backwardization, which is when the exact opposite occurs and you get a front-end spike and cheaper. And that started to happen in April when Trump was swinging his bat. The other irony and tell that there was clearly a problem is Trump, for no reason, seemed to come out and say, "I wasn't worried about the bond markets in April." And I remember this distinctly. And I said, "I wonder who asked that question or what prompted him to make that statement." And now we're getting the entrails of this post-mortem coming out now from the Bank of International Settlements back to the Fed, who've now disclosed that actually four times the amount of treasuries are held by already a whale in the treasury market is now four times bigger, which just moved like came into, I think, second or third largest supposed, let's just say, foreign entity that's holding. So to me, there is fraudulent, false managing of the auctions that has had hedge funds be big bidders and the primary dealers being big facilitators of unique specialist finding tools that are entirely reliant on things never going wrong, which is invariably walking the minefield of one of these days. And that's my flyby on that. And it leads to the other key point on it is that it is such a big Ponzi that the money markets would blow up as a result, and the repo lending markets, which is the interbank lending, that the Federal Reserve is virtually guaranteed to be forced to come in the event of them blowing up. So it's the standard case of privatize our profits, socialize our losses,
So,
which was the
Francis,
model behind subprime.
I wanted to jump in there on the repo, piece, and if that can kind of give us some clues to more of the stress within the system that isn't actually necessarily being acknowledged. The other day there was 8.35 billion put into the repo system, as well as an announcement that there was another 491 billion as a standing repo facility. So is this, a possible sign of the liquidity issue that is kind of maybe, I don't want to say for sure, but like that this could be the start of a liquidity issue for those overnight lenders and borrowers.
The interest, it's a very good question, and you bang on. It shows your understanding is so high on this. The big problem is as issuance is in a parabola and climbing, a la the 1 trillion every year, and some of the primary dealers are these leveraged basis trade lenders, they will continue the faster the issuance, the faster the demand on the repo liquidity, because these buyers are utilizing it as a real-time flexible borrowing venue for actually securing the purchases on the scale that they are doing them, because they don't have those means. These aren't trillion assets under management hedge funds. These are hedge funds that have a few hundred million that are getting levered up by 100 times. So they don't even own them. They own 1%, maybe two. And there might be a margin in some instances of two. And what's actually happened with the negative haircut is actually there's no margin. In fact, they're being overextended borrowing. So, and they are reliant on the bulk of their purchase being funded through the repo market. And the repo market liquidity is being absorbed by them, which is exactly why your point is the Fed continually needs to provide liquidity to it, because the money still has to come from somewhere if you're buying it, if there's a transaction and there is money being forwarded to the government. So you're probably having on one hand the government getting the sale on the treasury, and then the Fed as a proxy for government providing on the left hand, you know, providing the liquidity for the hedge funds to get sufficient borrowing to actually secure sufficient scale to actually buy on the degree that they are. And so it's 100% correct that that does that. And in fact, there's a nice Twitter thread that highlights all this and says that the more they issue, the more liquidity will be drained from the repo market. And of course, issuances are going only one way and up.
Yeah, I think you and I both shared that thread, and it's quite a lengthy read, but the way that the guy laid it out, I'll pull it up here in a sec to let people, or I'll put the link in the show notes.
Good idea.
But you know, the ability to understand something like that is you need to have quite a high understanding, it seems like. But you know, walking through it step by step like that was extremely helpful to me. But you know, I saw this headline today, and it was that Trump is actually maybe considering Bessent for the new Fed chair. As we know, Powell's term is up in May. Do you think it really matters who the Fed chair is, as the math only really works in one way at this point?
In truth, it doesn't really. It's personality politics. Mm-hmm. The management of this grand game is being controlled by people, nameless people that you and I don't see. And the agendas, they have to be smart enough to take the orders, but they are order takers. You know, it's quite laughable. Some people put him forward, him and Trump, as saving the America from, you know, the Anglo-Dutch cartel that used to be known as the divorce set. And the irony is they're all part of the same club on a big enough scale. And they've all got managers that are managing and handlers. And this notion that Bessent would turn on Soros, who was someone who was founded by, which is this kind of American cope, I call it. And I don't do that to antagonize my American audience. They're huge and I love them.
Yeah.
There are certain influences that want to make out like there's a grand magic trick that's going to save everybody from this. And they've voted right. And these guys are saving you. To those people that think that all they had to do is stay at home and vote, and the fact that you chose Trump, he's the right guy. And he's now chosen Bessent, who's the right guy. And these personalities that you all like and know, and this is your front man, is all there is to the situation, is foolhardy for me. It's foolhardy, distractionary, and it's going to keep you out of doing the action you need to do to be saving yourself. So I call that cope, because there is no way, there is no ending to this hegemony and this Ponzi scheme. It's unsustainable, and the numbers are going parabolic, and there's no chasing a parabola. I use the analogies, Tom, if we roll the rock into a snowball down the mountain, and it's now gained strength and we've let it go, and it's halfway down the mountain now on a, you know, a gradient like that. The village is getting hit. We don't, you and I don't Superman over in our capes and, you know, hold it over. It doesn't matter. I've used so many metaphors for trying to explain this. I talk about Inception, the movie, where the whole movie takes place, or a large portion of it, after the cars crashed over the bridge. You know, and you're dropping into those lower time frames where, you know, you live years as only seconds, and they've got to try achieve something, and they're coming up all the levels to get back into the car. The point is, it doesn't matter who the driver is. You can say it's Niki Lauda or Schumacher or Ayrton Senna. You know, it doesn't matter which pedals he pushes and how brilliant his timing is, or whether the traction control is on or off. You're hitting the water. You know, you're going into the Hudson Bay or whatever it was that crashed off the bridge. There's no question about it. It's not about personalities. It's about trajectory and course. You're in the groove, in the rut. It's a whole shot. You know, you're in the super tube. You jumped in at the top. You don't get to stop halfway down. It's just accelerate and finish in the pool. And the action that was taken a long time ago has made this irreversible. So I always find it interesting when people get sucked into the personalities. Oh, but this guy, he's more prone to do this, and this guy's more prone to do that. And I'm just like, doesn't matter. You can put a mathematician in the vertical super tube, or you can put a physics, you know, a Nobel Prize laureate with a physics degree. He's ending up at the pool in the bottom, just like everybody else.
They all have the same amount of potential energy.
Exactly. Because you have the height, as you mentioned, potential energy. It's a near vertical drop. You're hitting the water. It doesn't matter what his IQ was or if he was retarded. He's hitting the water. We're all equal in terms of things like gravity and physics. And this is a mathematical certainty. You're in the super tube. You know, you don't stop and start climbing your way back up. It doesn't happen like that. It's slippery and it's steep, and you've got too much speed. So you're hitting the wall. And so I always put that down to, it creates news because people like to talk about people. Most people are actually people watchers and talk about people. The really successful people in business, which I think of yourself, and I'd like to think of as myself and some of the other people that just focus on truth, is what are the facts and the matter? What do you do of value add? How do you leverage that? Scale up. It's not about, oh, but that guy, I wouldn't have him in his show because of that personality feature or trait, or he dresses funny. That's the people that watch reality TV and Netflix. And unfortunately, it's 90% of the mass audience market. And they're very easily waylaid about, well, this guy says that and he's more prone to do that. He's a hedge fund manager. He was seeded by George Soros. These are the same people that were flushing all the immigrants in. He's not working for you. Nobody ever works for you. You don't vote yourself freedom. They work for the people that put them there. That's how it is. It's simple as that. That's the system. It's a captured system. That's how it works. That's why you're allowed a vote. If it changed anything, you wouldn't be allowed a vote. The voting is a mass psychosis thing. It's a participation trophy for mass psychosis, thinking that your event. That's why I don't vote. I haven't voted in absolute decades. And it's why I don't make myself the slave of any one nation country, because they're weaponized to attack you. And the more tools they do have that for doing so, they will. And we are the patsies at the poker table. And I have to sometimes keep slamming the hand on the table and say, grasp that, and then come back to me with the question on whether that person's OCD is going to really change the fact of whether you're hitting the swimming pool or not in the super tube. I'm not unloading on you on that, because I find it interesting, but I find it interesting from the theater point of view. You know,
of course,
that's the showmanship and the theater and all of that. And then, you know, I jokingly say, well, is Jay Powell going to the Cayman Islands now to help the hedge funds, you know, or has he made enough money? You know, they're all worth hundreds of millions, and they've all been helped onto that ladder. And they're going to keep being helped on that ladder, and they're going to keep helping the system that made them rich and live a different standard of life to everybody else and pass the costs of their standard of life onto everybody else. So, you know, no is the answer. It won't matter. It's just a different voice, a different tone, a different picture on the TV. It's like you may as well have cartoons. You know, you might have SpongeBob SquarePants, and then you have the walrus and the octopus and the squid. You know, put on whoever you want. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's pointed to as a, let's say, a new development, and especially within this administration, is the stablecoin legislation, and this idea that that brings new and renewed demand to the treasury market. You know, I've asked this several times, and I just kind of keep coming back to the same point of, you know, how deep is that, let's say, capital pool that really comes from that side, to be able to create more and a new vector of demand for treasuries.
And it's insufficient, hopelessly. So there's a lot of what they call Trump's 5D chess. It's kind of a QAnon pitch where you say, no, we've worked this masterful plan. And the current flavor of the month is the stablecoin treasury purchaser. So let's also just highlight. So USDT, which is the largest, which is Tether, essentially has been around, I think, from, I'm going to guess, I could be wrong, 2011, maybe even 2010, possibly before. That'll only further embellish my point if it's earlier. In all their purchasing of collateral from then to today, they've accumulated 163 billion. And in just the last 30 days, we issued a 550. So one stable coin's entire life has not come within one fourth, about 25-30% of 1 month's issuance. And the key mathematical fact is you don't catch a parabola once it's gone parabolic. You kill a monster when it's small, otherwise it's too late. We didn't stop the snowball that was this big at the top of the mountain, me and you, Tom. Once it's halfway down the hill and 9 tons and a diameter of 15 meters, the village is going to, it's going to be four times that when it hits the village, and houses are getting smashed. Mm-hmm. It's beyond. So in the same way, the tether to even match the current rate of issuance would be unbelievable. Tether's total market cap is not sufficient. It would have to explode to such a ridiculous degrees to even begin to match what is essentially a 1 trillion every 2 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine Tether's market cap, which I will double check for you right now, and I'll give you a number. The largest stable coin. Of course, there are one or two others. There are actually a few others, but none of them are as big. It's currently 183 billion. Mm-hmm. Of which 163 is collateralized in treasuries, which, by the way, lost 55% from 2020 to 2023. Tether has been talking about the need to raise capital because they were keeping all the coupon interest as the most profitable business we've ever done. They kept the treasuries interest they were buying. They didn't shore up the value of it that lost. So they now have a black hole of backing, which is why they're also unaudited, and also why they talk about buying silver miners and gold and other assets that are actually appreciating but not paying a yield, which would make them richer. But their concern is they're running a Ponzi scheme, which isn't backed because the asset they chose has lost so much value in real terms. So not only will they be buying less because they have to plug holes in their balance sheet by percentage, they're also not buying enough anywhere near to get anywhere close. In fact, at least the Cayman Islands Ponzi scheme got up to 1.8 trillion for this minuscule little island in holdings. That's useful. It's about getting on for 4 months almost. Yeah, funding the US. Okay, yeah. What do you do after that? Is there another island in the Caribbean with less than 7 billion GDP that we can also put some of our proxy CIA hedge fund managers on? No. You know, so none of this matters. And the key point about the issuance is it's parabolic. It's going parabolic. It's one of the reasons why gold has been adjusting the way it has and why we will have a massive... We spoke about the biggest lie of stats being the payroll numbers and labor. They said there was no recessions because of red-hot labor market during the tail end of Biden-Yellen regime. Now they've since done a massive... So many restatements on non-farm numbers, not just month to month, quarter to quarter, and then annually, and then a second revision annually on it, that they've literally ripped more than a million people out that they were giving out. So this whole fallacy was that the labor numbers, we weren't in a recession. You were in a recession, the labor was a lie. Now, the next big statistical lie is inflation. And there's no doubt that the inflation is being grossly understated and that propaganda, BLS has now become outright propaganda for maintaining the proxy. So remember, these are the guys who keep the score. They are the equivalent of the AAA rating loan agencies during subprime of Moody's and S&P, et cetera, et cetera. They're the ones saying, no, all groovy, all good here. Carry on, keep stacking. No, it's not got a pile of welfare people that don't have a job on a 2 year that'll reset. No, all good. So it's quite clear that the CPI is a lie and is in double digits. So you should be, we're in a massive fiat debt debasement cycle. That is why gold was moving as fast as it was. It's got a technical correction now and it's not anywhere close to the top. It's the first rest in a major move until you've had full debt collapse and contagion, and you will know this because this will be like a CV19 subprime event. All the headlines will be financial economic ones unless they start a war at the same time, and even still you're going to get a lot of financial headlines leaking out, and you will know it because there will be job losses, there will be pain, there will be social unrest, there's going to be a bunch of stuff. I don't have anything good to say there, but the key part of that is if you're in gold, you preserve your balance sheet. And not only will you preserve it, you'll preserve it when everyone else isn't. And wealth is a relative thing. Whatever they issue, seashells next as fiat proxy, we fiat tokenized CBDCs, et cetera, and stable coins from various countries, which will be tracked and surveillanced. Yes, it's greater control for them. But with that new thing, at least if you've preserved your balance sheet coming over, you're not going to be stripped of everything when you get put through the time machine and taken off the old train onto the new monorail system, and you come on there buck naked. It's terrible to start from zero. You've worked your whole life. Some people are pensionable age, but they're going to renege on all their promises. They're forced to. They don't have the money. It's unsustainable, and that means it dies. You know, it's the invariable conclusion. And we are in that final stage. Now, many people have been saying that for many periods, but the escalation continues. And the degree of deception now is extreme. And more importantly, there is an alternative being built, and nation states are reverting to truth. And it's all the communist nations. So we have thesis and synthesis. Supposedly, Europe and America, particularly in the UK, represent capitalism. They actually represent cacocracy and capture. And the communist nations are actually representing truth and sound money on a basis of they don't want to participate in the fag end of the West's Ponzi. So the irony is, you should actually want to participate more in. And I mean, I'll find an American more relatable to a Chinese person who can't speak English all day long. But the point of the matter is, if you're playing the principle, one is basing on sound money and stacking gold. The other is at a tail end running proxies offshore islands that are holding up the demand for a debt instrument that's being proliferated at 1 trillion every 2 months. And there's such a vast number people don't even understand. Counting to 1 million, 12 and a half days, 1 billion, 32 years, 1 trillion, 32,000 years, one number every second. How many descendants would have to count for you, Tom, for you to get to 32,000? How many grandchildren, great great grandchildren? It's insane. It's so vast. It's unsustainable. It's a parabola. You can't catch it. Treasury stablecoin issuance can't catch the parabola. It's 3/4 of the way down the hill, our snowball. It's stuffed with rocks. It weighs 150 tons. It's massive, and everything's getting smashed, and that's it. And anything else is cope.
I appreciate exactly how you said that, Francis. Anything else is cope, because this debt situation is something that is only going in one direction. But you brought up this idea of gold having a correction here. Can you give us a little bit of context or perspective of this 10% pullback, what it actually means in the broader, let's say, bull market here, that a lot of times tries to kick people off as it climbs.
Yep, it's the mechanical bull. I've said the real thing is psychological. Patience and real commitment to the cause, it's psychological. You earn your money in your patience and your belligerence. That's where you get paid. You don't buy. And that's why I put this message out, to keep other people in the gold investment trade. I say trade, I should say investment. If you're leveraged, it's a different game. You can't, your tightness on risk and everything else becomes far more relevant. I just want to show the corrections we've had as well. Let's just do this. Here's some corrections. All the way along, you're going to face corrections. Just get that out of the way. Let's go daily. These are the corrections you've had so far. You've had a 10.84 post the April basis trade wobble that saw gold jump 18%. It jumped 18% in a very short time frame and then pulled back 10.84. You're up, and then you ended up in a long continuation pattern setting up, and then you got a record run, a rest, and then a melt up. This was melt up. It needed a pullback. You are on a bit of a hammer here, which is quite a positive candlestick. That means you're getting bought back up. We'll wait and see. The day's still got time. I don't want to call a bottom on it, but in terms of downside, the top to that absolute low is 10.26. It's less than that correction, a little bit more sharp, and probably might go a little bit further. But you'd also done a whole bunch more coming into it. And the other thing I highlighted was how long it's taken to hit $1,000 and each thousand thereafter. So essentially, you go back to 1883. How far have we got data on this map, this chart of ours? And I'm going to have to make it log scale because it gets ridiculous. If we go back to, the earliest date, I have 1833 here. we add 200 years to that, that's 2033. That's about 8 years too many. We're on 2025. So if we just go, okay, so it's under 200 by, call it 192. Well, when did you first make 1,000? You made 1,000 in 2008. So 1833 to 2008, wow. You know, you're talking about 175 years to make $1,000. That then you went 12 years further, and so you've gone from, what did I say, 108 to your first 1,000, then 12 years to your second 1,000, which was made here on these highs here.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just get rid of that. So let me draw with a pink line. So that was 1,000 there. You traded, that's everything there is your previous history from the very beginning. That's your 108. And then from here till there is essentially 2008 to 2020. So that's 12 years.
Yep.
It's quite a reduction. And then we called this and we said, this is a 2,000 to 3,000 run. Now you made the 3,000 mark on this candle here. You can see the high 3,126. So you went from 2020 to 2025. Your next is in 5 years, and it's less than five because this was back end of 2020. It's kind of 4.5, but let's leave it there. And then how long did it take you to go from 3 to 4,000? 6 months. That's a 0.5.
Mm-hmm.
So you've gone from 108 years. This is called a parabola.
Which also speaks to your point of the parabolic nature of, you know, the issuance of the debt, but also the erosion of the currency, right?
Correct. The inverse gold chart is your dollar buying power chart.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a gold dollar. It's two dancing here, the tango together. You know, it's one's relative value to the other. The inverse of this chart, which is the dollar in gold ounces, is a downward parabola. And just to make that point a little bit more clear, I've got it in log scale. You know, so, I mean, clear the face. That's what your buying power is doing on an inverted basis. Invert the scale. That's your dollar buying power right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I refer to Hemingway's bankruptcy curve, given it that name, the convexity of a downside. It's what it's actually an inverse parabola. Slowly at first, with occasional little slaps, which warn you that things aren't going great, little few bad moments, whoops, slaps. Okay, steadying the ship, whoops, slaps, whoop. It just gets steeper. So you are living in debt, fiat, one and the same, debasement error. The only trade, and people go, oh, I wonder, what about stocks? What about this? I just get frustrated. I'm saying, like, it's, you've come, and let's just say, you know, it's Metallica on stage. What, you know, watch the show. Metallica is the primary show. You know, don't sit there and say, I wonder what, you know, the Spice Girls would be like. I mean, you know, you're at a heavy metal concert to see Metallica, you know, long-standing, awesome rock metal band. You know, the main show here is the fiat debasement trade. Don't start talking to me about the Spice Girls. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to listen to it. I don't want to hear it. It's garbage. You put the SPY or the NASDAQ, the IXIC in gold ounces. Don't talk to me about the guys that talk about blow-offs. It's not right. In gold ounces, it's rebasing downwards. You know, yes, look at the NASDAQ, how awesome. It was a bubble in 1999. It was a blow-off in 1999. And it was the right asset to be in, timing-wise, for that era. We've changed epoch. You divide by gold now, and that chart changes entirely. There's your time you should have been long tech stocks, and you should have got out in the blow-off somewhere. Since then, this is re-rating downside. And this is the strongest market of them all, with any number of potential Enrons. I've just mentioned NVIDIA and Oracle and the AI circle jerk. I mean, Oracle just did a deal. I mean, this is the era of complete Ponzianomics. You have to take a cold shower every now and then just to wake up. Oracle jumped 25% on doing and I'm going to call it a prospective deal, but it was a signed deal to deliver data centers that they've not yet built to an AI chat GBT to pay them on earnings they've not yet made, requiring power that would require 2.5 Hoover Dam's amount of power to deliver, or 4 or 5 nuclear reactors of the typical average size. And they get a jump on their stock market. It's on balloon juice, Tom. I mean, we could sign a deal. I'm going to buy 20% stake in the Competent Man podcast for $500 million.
Yeah.
On money I don't have, but I'm telling you, when I make it big, I promise I'm good for it, Tom. And you agree and revalue it and list on create an NFT and a token and value your podcast at 500 million times five, because I'm only getting 20% on it, and start lending against it and buy yourself a Ferrari and a house. Now see if how good we are able to do business like that. And it's an absolute clownery of casino. It's a complete casino of, I mean, look at the NFTs markets. There's a guy, this whole, all these bored apes. I laugh at all of them. They're now the profile pictures of all the spammers that are trying to sell spam. And all the guys that bought them and did this. I bought this. There's people that bought for $69 million. Now, some of it is a scam, some of it is money laundering, some of it is some foundation paying the left hand from the right hand to create a fake market that everyone goes, ooh, NFTs is the thing. They've bought JPEGs for ridiculous amounts of money that they can't give away for a few thousand today. So, I mean, there is real perversion of mindset and fool economy out there. There's real foolhardy, and it goes right up to the highest level. And the biggest practitioners are all the status criminals. With Trump, with all his Zio friends, Schwab sitting there, he made $1 billion today. They're literally telling you front running decisions, front running a Palantir contract awards stock merchant. You've got some other guy that has just been made 25% on, I think it was Intel, that's on the committee that awarded whatever. I mean, it's just a cacocracy of insider trading. People used to go to jail. I can remember a particular guy that went to jail for a lengthy period because he was a broker with a mutual fund and was front running their orders. I mean, literally now it's completely accepted if you're in this insider leadership class. So you are living in this perversion and you have to stay sane. Your job is, we see it for what it is. We love our life. We still have a good time. Me and you will ride bikes again, I hope, in the dirt soon. And we enjoy being who we are and the years we have left. But at the same time, we dispassionately disassociate ourselves from a completely perverse Ponzionomics of crooks, criminals, and deceivers. And the only thing you do that is really sound, and I was getting out my little blocks. I kept the one or two I got from the vault. That's 10 ounces of silver. This is slightly more. That's 100. My grip strength is failing me. I'm going to battle on the bikes when we get back in there because this is pretty heavy. 100 ounces actually is pretty heavy. I don't want to take a hit on the temple with this guy. And this is real money, and it's truth. Three nines. Scottsdale Mint, Arizona, Phoenix, and that's real money. In God we trust. Now, I don't get all religious and preach faith to people, but I certainly trust in sound physical scarcity and none of this phony business anonymics that is totally Ponzi-fied. So people just have to say that's all fluff and it all ends. And that's a fact. It will end. It does. The subprime ended, the dot-com ended, they do end. They go on a little longer than you expect as part of parcel. But the truth trade in all of us is your gold and it will be your silver. We haven't even, so for those that think gold's a top, let's just deal with that. I'm still sharing screen, so I'll just jump on this. By the way, this is the SPY, if you wanted to see why we're doing equity indexes divided by gold. I may as well do one or two others. This is rolled over. You can see the big boom. This is a re-rating downside. This is typical of reversion. We've had a little bit of weakness now in the metals, but you've got the making of a head and shoulder. A little bit of hammers, you get a rally for a right shoulder. Bye bye, Miss American Pie. That does that. Not today, not tomorrow, but that's potentially what's coming. This is called convexity, is rounding out, rounded top. You love a rounded bottom and you don't like a rounded top if you're a long. That is down. That is the spy in gold ounces. And you can put it in log scale, you can put it in regular scale, it doesn't look any better. So the gold is your winner for retaining your wealth. And is it a top? Well, you've got to ask yourself, gold silver ratio, where are we? Well, the gold silver ratio is sitting high up in the 80s. You know, and actually it's going up. You have a look at that. That's a hammer, it's going up. You're at 84 ounces. You know, that 10 ounces and that 100 ounces, that 100 ounce bar will only give me 1 ounce of gold, you know, a small amount of change at the moment. It weighs an absolute ton. When this goes to single digit gold silver ratio, we dip below 10, I sell my silver. Till then, it's a buy and you keep buying. If it starts to break down violently and we get through this, the 70s, we're in a bit of a box here. We've been in this captivated range for quite some time here. It's the sort of 75 to 95 range. You break this to the downside. At the moment, you're just at a hammer. You're probably going to go up for a bit. So metals stay a bit weaker for a while. Silver may be a bit weaker. But by the time that happens, you want to be all in silver. You might not be able to get it. And we say the 90s, $90. So the other part of silver, if we're talking silver now, is it requires three touches and breaks on the fourth. We talk about it once, twice, three times a lady. And if you look at its history, you have 1980, you have 2011, and you have here now a shooting star and a pullback. The next break is the most critical break. And we think, yes, it is a reversal candle on a small scale, and you might just do that. But you're not, each time and cycle is significantly smaller than the other. As I was talking about the parabola, and the parabola of debt, which is at a trillion, which is, as I say, a ridiculous number. Each 2 months. I mean, it's all ridiculous. It's all completely bizarre. It does end. It's got too big too fast. So this will come down and then it will go. And then you're going to be at, as I say, $90. It'll pause before running the three digits. Then we see 333, and then you outperform beyond that. So there is going to be a moment, and I'm watching this on lower time frames, where I will be wailing in. I'll even use some leverage trades if I feel I can pick a bottom. Not quite ready yet. So this is all playing out exactly as it should by our reckoning. And it's a beautiful HVF setup that has generated those targets for us, which is what we do on our YouTube channel. That, in fact, you were a breakout from there. And we're a little bit earlier than all the cup and handles. We got a tighter stock, guys, and we have a bigger target. So this is that, those blocks, I probably won't keep them on that table. They'll go back in the vault. They'll become too valuable. They'll become a threat, you know, for like robbery in the future. As cheap as they are today, they will get a lot more expensive.
Francis, how much do you think that the, let's say, this historical reversion to the mean argument holds water, as you know, silver has really taken on much more of an industrial quality versus a monetary quality that it once had?
I think you've got to remember that the cycle has become far, far larger. We just don't remember silver as a monetary metal. It's going to get brought back. It is an industrial, it is used, but even gold is used industrially, but not to the same degree because it's too expensive. But silver is artificially cheap. Copper will replace it, and eventually copper could be too expensive. We used to have coppers. As small change in our country in South Africa growing up as a kid. And then it became too valuable for the money, you know, the 1 cent and the 2 cents. So I've lived the copper becoming too value. Older people have lived the silver becoming too value. We used to call them silvers, but they stopped having silver. They had a lot of alloy in them. They looked silver but weren't. So I can't say I ever had 100 or a high degree of silver in my coin handed to me in my years. I'm not old enough, but we will see these things remonetized. Yes, they'll still continue to be used industrially. Platinum is incredibly undervalued and is used industrial, but it's, you know, it's got a price in the thousands. And so we just haven't, we've had to sit through the financialization of everything, where there was a very successful suppressionist system put in place that managed the degree that gold and silver were allowed to tweet in the gold mine about the damage that was being done. And that's another reason why it's going to run so hard. Technically speaking, we should have had a gold price that had a mild increase every year, day in, day out on the whole. If you had an aggregated whole with the issuance of money at the rate of the M2 increase and inflation. And what's actually happened is it was suppressed, went down, went lower when it should have been allowed to be doing that. And we are getting catch up and back pay as well as it does. It's been unduly suppressed and you're getting re-rating. So the amount of latent suppression energy, it is truly the ball that's been pushed too far below the seawater and was really pumped up tight. That's now going to absolutely surge its way back up to the surface so fast. And we've got back pay that we're now going to get. So you're getting the discounted price. You need to look at the $62 or the $48, whatever you're being charged for silver now as some form of discounted price that will be in the thousands at some point, not too far off. And if you think this is far off and that it's, you know, you'll be 99 or dead by the time it happens. Let me say that things are critical. You've just had a basis trade wobble in April and you saw how much the interest rates moved and how much gold moved on that. Mm-hmm. Imagine we have a proper unwind of that whole situation. Mm-hmm. It will be debilitating.
Francis, of course, platinum has moved, let's say in the recent couple months. Is that, you know, are we taking a, you know, an equal type of pause in that metal as well at this point?
It's relatively stronger so far, Tom. Mm-hmm. I really like platinum. And people don't understand why I say it could go up more than silver. And that I'm a massive silver bull, by the way. It's like you're talking about your children. I don't, you know, one might be slightly more talented footballer. I don't hate any of them. They're all my children. but you look at how much it's come down as a result of gold, which is the king, it's only come down 8%. Gold's at about 10.8, mm-hmm. where it is now, and silver's 13.9 down. So in relative performance during this bear period, it's a very thin market. One or two South African mines were closed down because price was non-economic. And platinum doesn't show up when you're mining for copper. It's not like, hey, we're digging up copper. Hey, we're digging up some gold. And look at this. We just got a whole ton of platinum. So in terms of the scarcity, gold and silver is around 7 or 8 by how the level that it's found in the ground. Let's take that as the benchmark. And platinum is about 20 to 16 times more rare than gold. So if you look at the ton, gold, there were about 3,000 tons mined last year. You get about 170 tons of platinum. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference. It's a heck of a big difference. And I did the math. You know, go ask Grok the last time you had full platinum numbers in for the year and full gold. It's a massive difference. Massive. It's 16, 17 times on the last time I had production. So you're talking about 8 times 17. So you take the current silver price, let's say it's $50 for ease of use. You multiply it by 8, that's the how much more common it's found than gold. You're at 400, and then you now multiply 400 by 17. And you can see you get well past the platinum price at the moment. So I actually think the biggest one is platinum, but I think it comes later in the cycle as well with the silver surge. When silver is dropping through 75 and hitting 50, 60, going down to 30 PE, that's going to be an absolute unbelievable platinum move, I think. And I actually think platinum ends up whatever gold is more so by price. So it's going to be a higher price. And it's coming, of course, from 1500. It's cheap gold now for me. It's white version of cheap gold that actually gets to finish higher. So, but try buy it in any volume. You know, I got some maples. They were the cheapest. The premium on the Eagles, unbelievable. You know, the costs, the structural physical costs to get into them are disproportionately high. And even still, it's worth buying. Because it's going to do what silver does plus 20 or 30. It's going to end up more expensive than gold. That's my take. It's shock opinion. But you're talking about South Africa and Russia as providers as well. You know, that's 80% of your market right there.
Well, it's a concentrated market. There is a bit more obviously recycling than silver, which I guess would be a counterpoint to that, but you know, the rarity of it and the fact that in, you know, it could be possibly used as a weapon, as we've seen recently with China using the rare earths seemingly as a negotiating tactic. Same kind of idea.
I think the biggest thing, the irony is they're pushing us all into NFTs and digitization, is that this is the most important time to have physical commodities for nations. Yes, so it's very interesting that governments, certainly in the West, want to digitize us, digitize our money, push us into virtual holidays and not eating meat and a variety of peculiarities. But they're not pushing us into securing resources, gold or silver, like China is doing with their citizens. And but the government themselves is making rapid investments, trying to do deals to secure resources in Australia and everywhere else, whilst not suggesting the same potential. I think it's going to be a physical commodity period of great gain. But the monetary commodities come first. You can see oil is definitely not the one to be in, and that's something we called a year and a half ago. So monetary commodities first, but softs won't be too far behind, coffee and other things. So we're going to see huge inflation, and this is part of the fiat debasement trade. But eventually oil will move too, but just don't call the bottom on that one because there's a recession on. The economics are far worse than people are being told, and disposable income is low. And that's oil is like a thermostat. When the economy is weak, it helps reduce the burden and drops.
Well,
When it's super strong, 2006 and 7, and everybody was really in a liquid mass affluent sense, their houses were going up, people were got oil was very high. It hit 100 and almost $150 during that period until subprime happened, and it crashed all the way into the low 20s. So it's like a thermostat for economic, I call it the Rockefeller tax. When you're flush, it's big, and when the market is weak, it's low.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to get your take on, as you know, just a real symptom, let's say, of inflation and how that affects the, let's say, the feeling of inflation for the average consumer at the pump, right?
So the one thing the oil does do is it's baked into a lot of things: deliveries, ordering, holidays, driving seasons, all forms of things. So they get to mask some of the inflation by, and it's globally controlled, the oil market, very strongly, by letting it run weak and soft. And also, demand is lower than people are telling you because there's just not the same amount of discretionary expenditure. And the gold long oil short trade came out of a beautiful technical setup when oil rebounded from COVID to 130. It was $129. We said, that's it. You've got an inverted head and shoulder on gold versus oil in the charts, and it broke, and it went from 14 barrels for 1 ounce of gold to now you're in the 60s. And it's all it's baked into the weak. We have a hyperstagflation economic model. And that is that stagnation for the masses and retail, because things are costing a lot more, except the oil, and the fiat is debasing, causing that, and the cost of living is rising, except for the oil, and therefore demand, discretionary demand, is actually very low.
Well, Francis, on the other, you know, the other side of that, how dangerous do you think it is to be holding debt at this time in history?
Worst asset class you could probably be in. There will be moments where it will rally and you can get some yield. But unless you really want to time, it's picking up pennies in front of a freight train
Steamroller.
railway line. Yeah, it truly is. Yeah, it's gambling with financial existence
I meant more
in
so from
here.
the
There's
other side
just
of it.
way too
If
much of it about.
you're carrying debt, like a mortgage or, you know, a line of credit, having owing a lot of debt to a bank.
So the likelihood of potential rate spikes. So we discussed Caymans and the repo challenge. One of the outputs of crisis is actually a spike in interest rates if we go. Not because the economy is strong, but exactly the opposite. We've had complete weakness because this is a debt-based crisis. If debt devalues violently, rates spike. So, you should be retiring your highest debt first and getting out of it. You buy a half an ounce of gold, you retire half an ounce of debt. Do some stacking so that at least you start, but also do getting out of debt. And especially the debt where you have variable rate risk. Leave the fixed debt for last, but remember that even a contract can be reneged upon in extreme situations.
Francis, you and I have had many conversations about the, let's say, the way to kind of frame this time in history, what we're looking at going forward. You and I have talked about the Hegelian dialectic, the idea of problem solution reaction, or problem reaction solution being fed to us. So how do you, or what advice would you like to leave our listeners with from that perspective of understanding A, this time in history, and B, maybe some lessons that we've carried forward from the last 5 years?
So the lessons, your government is not your friend. They're actively working against you. When the chips are down and you're end of cycle, they aim to sustain themselves at the cost of you, which means there will be very little money left in services, collecting your rubbish, all forms of that. You're going to get reduced services at greater cost because the debt funding market mechanism is no longer functioning with a bottomless overdraft like it used to. That means your contract with state is getting frayed. And it's quite likely they're going to look to renegotiate and scavenge additional income from you in the name of we're all in this together, build back better, cliche sandwiches, politician word salads, a variety of narratives that they are going to use as excuses for throwing further burden on your back. You have enough to carry, focusing on getting out of debt, building your wealth, preserving that wealth, and establishing multiple avatars of existence across geographies and arbitrages of legal systems that secure you an existence outside of the West if everything goes as I anticipate it would. You can always still visit as a tourist. Your home country or your land of your birth, you can always visit friends, but you almost owe it to them to be a leader and establish a beachhead in other nations that are less participative in the controlled demolition of the financial sector. You are witnessing a controlled demolition. I mean, I don't know how many of you actually saw the cooling towers of the German nuclear reactor being destroyed. Recently, the worst decision. Merkel started it after Fukushima. They used Fukushima as an excuse in 2011, and they went on and on and on. And Germany now has one of the most expensive, as a producer manufacturer nation, has one of the most expensive, doesn't buy Russian gas and all sorts of things. I mean, it's a travesty of economic errors, of social political signaling and warfare, lawfare, and everything else but sound mind and sound money. And that's where you're being taken to. It's an inversion, perversion, and that is the spinal column of Europe. And with Europe collapsing, its manufacturing will also generally collapse. Its currency is overdue to collapse. The UK is a bigger basket case, and America, as the hegemon, is on the 26-foot ladder. It falls from the highest place. So his spine is broken. Others fall off smaller ladders. They get hurt too. But the hegemon is done. And many of your listeners, Tom, are sitting in Canada or America. And it's not a nice thing to hear someone say. And I don't celebrate it. It's not with glee. It's the people that got hold of you, hijacked your country, and got into the corridors of power, the parasites, have set in course a destroyer's path because they enrich themselves and it's a destruction. They accelerate their enrichment in destruction and they increase their power as you pivot into totalitarianism. And everyone will be in shock. Their biggest product is fear. And I tell you, don't be afraid of them. I stand up on YouTube and I diss them every day. I mock them, I laugh at them, and I try to have as few governments in my life as possible by living a nomadic capitalist existence. Not everyone can do that. If you have kids, but they can move, get out of the West. You need to think the unthinkable because you're a talented guy, Tom. But if the country goes that there's no money and everybody's bereft, I talk about, I give a stupid example of surfing. If I give the top surfer of the world an ironing board and I put him on the flat Mediterranean, I'm out surfing him, but not because I've got any talent. I could be a faster bike rider than you, Tom, as good as you are. I'm going to put you on a 50cc monkey bike and I'm going to get on my 819 Norden expedition and I'm going to put us on roads that are not too challenging and I'm going to blow dust in your face. Doesn't mean I'm a better rider than you. I just put you in conditions that your higher talents couldn't manifest and get you the outcome that made me look better. Just your success is determinant on environment and positioning. I don't think I've been brilliant at anything. I've just positioned well and been prepared to move. That's the key thing. So go where the waves are if you're a surfer. Go where the money's flowing. The money is leaving the West to go to the East. The parasites are doing a controlled demolition. Everything else is cope, as we've already said. So be early. The place, then people say, but where do you go? It's important to leave. It's not always where do you go as part of it. But I respect that at some point you have to arrive someplace and spend some time there. It's important to actually leave first without perfection because there actually isn't perfection out there. I mean, I'm in the fringes of Cyprus, both north and south. I'm in Georgia for the capital, zero capital gains, which I'm hoping to make on my gold, my crypto, my miners, my everything investment pot. And I'm in a territorial tax system for my company where I pay only a moderate to low amount. And I live some of the year in South Africa where it's cheap to live, but I don't stay there long enough to be part of their tax grid. That's kind of like a map of countries that none of which are truly Western, but with the canal, Panama needs it open. With the fringes of Cyprus, I kind of have good summer. It's quite close to Europe. It's in Europe, the southern part of Cyprus, but it's in and out if I want to be north and south. And I can travel anywhere from there. The garbage they're throwing down there. And because I'm not there more than 3 months in any one place, I don't care what the stuffed suit, the podium hall, the teleprompter reader is saying. He's not got that level of influence over my life. If you live 100% of your time in one country, you sit there transfixed by these people who have power over you selling fear. And their biggest product is fear because they need to make you scared. Disempower them, cut their testicles off, be a man that floats. I don't care of local politics here. As long as there's no one with guns breaking into my house and it's secure and safe, I don't even care to know. I don't even understand Spanish. And the less I know, the happier I am. I understand the world and how the world works. And I'm positioned for that. And I'm mobile and I'm liquid and I'm fluid and I don't have debt. And I'm leveraged only on key moments with a real key method with stop losses. I can be in a plane. I have targets, known size losses. And the rest is blue pot investments in really long-term things that are going to weigh up good. And I'm getting richer each year just by the positioning. And you too can do it. Everyone can do it. But you've got to start building. I'm quite shocked now when I look at it. Your property in different places. I come and I say, shit, in the last 5 years, I've actually done quite a bit. This is there. I've got shooting licenses in all the countries I go. You can have an amazing existence. I've got motorbikes in every country I live in. I've got a lot of things. I'm lucky. And each one is a different template, but of a beautiful existence. And none of them control my soul. And that's what you've got to reject. Don't let anybody have complete power over spoiling your mood. Independence, self-reliance, and give value. to as many people as you can in a scaled up way, which is what you're doing. And I'm really excited for your progress on your pod and want to congratulate you, by the way. And everyone watching this should hit the like button, subscribe to help in the early days of a YouTube channel as someone who started a YouTube channel, and share this channel to everyone's friends, because Tom is looking to do God's work and to serve you and bringing on quality guests. So please do that. And yeah, that's it. That's all I am, and that's all we are. And I'm glad and lucky to live a good life, and I'm going to continue living a better life. And I'm waiting for all these assets to crash. Man, I've got a Ferrari shopping list that I'll buy once they've done. I don't like overpaying. I can get them now, but I like a deal.
Yeah,
I like a real deal. I'm going to wait till the blood is in the street, all the financing is done, and everybody's flushed out and has to sell their toys. And I'll be buying people's toys and houses and property. It sounds vulture. It sounds predatory. It's not. I'm trying to help people to not be in that position. Those that don't listen are going to get what's coming, because they never understood the rules of the game. Understand the rules of the game. Politicians are not your friends. You are the marks. You're the patsy at the table. Be a smarter patsy than the rest of the patsies, and try have different, you know, have different places. Don't fall under your slave owner, your government, in the same way. The minute you sever ties with them and you're of more fluid existence, you get to choose who taxes you and how much. And that's important. I'll remind people of this compound. You double a dollar 20 years in a row, you made over $1,024,000. If you double a dollar every year and pay 30% tax on that, and then double the net amount 20 years in a row, you end up with less than 24 grand. They've taken your $1 million. And they haven't done anything good to it. They've given it to Israelis and Israel. They've given it to fight weapons in Ukraine for one Slav to kill another Russo-Slav. They're doing nothing good with it. They're destroying your nuclear industry in Germany. These are not people that are doing positive, sound money things. These are controlled demolition guys that are buying explosives to blow up your nation. Do not fund them. Do not fund them. Reduce the degree that you support these people. If more of us were doing this, they would have less tax base to continue to do what they're doing, and it would unravel a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm. Well, Francis, number one, I appreciate your support and the reminder for the subscribe and like, share on the channel. Number two, you know, you and I want to share very much the same things. And I think at the end of the day, a big part of that is a message of hope, but also a message of action. You have to take action in a lot of this stuff. It can be scary. I understand that. I've done a lot of it. I've experienced the scary parts, but I think the scariest part is the inaction and being afraid of what you don't know about, instead of just actually going out and experiencing it. And you know, you and I really try to share that message of trying to, I guess, engender and inspire action in our audiences, because, you know, that is the only way that you have the ability to check out of the system that has captivated you for so long.
Yeah, inertia and fear are two terrible, terrible outcomes. And one, they can often go hand in hand, like deer in the headlights as well. Mm-hmm. And that's never a good position, because you get hit by the big truck if you're there. Deathbed, you'd wish you lived more, you worried less. Mm-hmm. Less about anxiety, less about everything. Get a workout regime, get a cold plunge, meditate, shake it all off. You have a divine skill that is useful to others. Find a way to express it. Find a way to scale it. Keep moving. Keep taking a step. Do everything, one thing on your sheet every day, your 5-point to-do list towards this establishing your sovereignty. Buying just one of these is already one of those things. Finding out, clicking our links, finding out how we get people Georgia banking, mm-hmm. how you can have multi-currency accounts and not be exposed only to the dollar, how you can have Bullion Vault associated with a Wise account with all our stuff, and how we do all of that so that you can actually have even the 50% despite this pullback this year. All of these things you can do, and then start accumulating rights of residency. It's a beautiful travel journey, see the world. It's an adventure. You've been invited on an adventure. You either stay in your country, frozen, full of fear that they're pumping at you through all their media and advancing their agenda and paralyzed, or you say, sod this. When I'm lying on my deathbed, I'm going to think of all these free, healthy moments that I could have had. I could have been doing more loving, living, and you've just got to get going. And any amount of action is far better. Not all plans will work out, but any amount of action. It's a psychological game. You're in a psyop and you should refuse it. Turn it out, use your subconscious mind, block it. I'm going to live. I'm going to live great, and I'm going to die owing these guys millions of taxes I never paid. I'm going to live rich and famous and fabulous if that's what you want. And go and be that guy. And we're here to help you do that on the Market Sniper, by the way. With HVF Method, we've helped turbo charge people stacking in silver and gold with judicious use of leverage, occasionally using the HVF Method. We've helped preserve people's wealth and broaden it out by jurisdiction and secure you a lifestyle of freedom with optionality. Those are our three reasons. Pop over to our YouTube channel and engage with us further. Book a call if you like, or just watch our videos until you feel comfortable to book a call. There's no sales. There's only an onboarding team which will explain what we do. We are a community of the willing, and we have a 14-day money-back guarantee. We're delighted to have anybody from your channel and help them move forward. Lots of Canadians, by the way. We've got Canadians here in Panama, right down the road from me, from our community. And you'll realize there's more awake people just like you who've already begun. So it's time you catch up with your real friends, the people that don't gaslight you when you say, this ain't right, what I'm hearing. They're already moving. They're waiting here for you.
Well, I couldn't agree with any of that more, Francis. Of course, all of his stuff is available at The Market Sniper on YouTube, themarketsniper.com, and of course on X as well, at The Market Sniper. Francis, thank you so much for helping me inspire others, and for all of your technical knowledge as well today. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, my friend.
Great to see you again, Tom. Thanks for having us on.